I have a vivid memory that I think is from grade 7 at this time of year. This is the time of the year when teachers are kind of done their course materials and they want the class to go easy. And so this was the gym teacher running a session on health. And we walked into the classroom and there was a big TV set up. So we knew we were not going to have a lesson so much as an experience of something. It turned out it was a movie, but before he showed it, he put a title up on the blackboard. Now that's where it's hazy for me, because I think the title was Peer Pressure, which, you know, makes sense in grade 7 that a teacher might want to talk about that. But probably he should have written Addiction, because we saw a movie about people who were alcoholics. And there were a group of friends, and they met every day to talk about their lives and grumble and drink. And I can picture, maybe I've projected this onto the characters, but I picture in that group Alan Alda and Carol Burnett. So, you know, a group of adults who were getting together to decompress and be frustrated about their lives and drink. And they would talk about their work and their families, and one particular one of them, his life reached bottom, and in his family and in his work, and he decided that he was going to stop drinking. And what ends up happening is his friends basically sabotage all of his efforts because they need him to be part of their circle of what they've had, and it means something to them, but it's a matter of whether he will lose his circle of friends and start over with nothing, or whether he will give in to the sabotage. And as I remember it, he gave in to the sabotage and continued to drink with them. So it was a movie that really disturbed me. And there is an element of that it's about addiction, but there's another element of it's about peer pressure. It's about those things in our lives that structure us to stay in the places where we already are. Now that's an example on the individual level, but I want to do one more on the societal level. Maybe you recall the whole account of OxyContin and the Sackler family, and how that highly addictive medication became pervasive in Canadian and in American society, prescribed by doctors, with people becoming addicted, and a whole industry of kind of keeping it in place where protests didn't matter. It took forever for that to change, and there was personal human damage along the way for it to change. It was as if the structures of society kept people in this place of captivity. We could do it for any other thing. We could do it about prohibition. We could do it up about the industry that has grown up around marijuana being widely available. There are forces on an individual level that keep us the same, that keep us where we are. And on a societal, economic level, there are forces that do that as well. Even if it means keeping you unwell, there are structures that keep you on the path that you're on. Yesterday, we had our church field trip to the Beechwood Cemetery. And what really struck me was how our guide walked us through some of the history of Canada's residential schools, particularly of people who are buried in the cemetery. So we stopped at a gravesite that was, what she said, a person who was on the wrong side of history, someone who was an architect of the residential schools. And we also stopped at the grave of Peter Henderson Bryce. And you may or may not have heard that name. He was a significant person in how healthcare is even today in Canada. But in 1907, he wrote a piece critiquing the whole idea of residential schools because they cause deaths. And the response to that was that his report was buried, he was removed from his job, and that was 1907. It took more than half of a century for anything to even begin changing. It took more than that. What was that about? Maybe a government doing an assessment of its electability? Maybe the prejudices of the time pervasive in our whole country? Maybe that the schools were already in place, and now that you have something that's everywhere, it's structured in place, and it has to be an act of will and cost to change it. In any case, it lasted a very long time, and Peter Henderson Bryce's grave is decorated as a much visited place in Beechwood Cemetery. There's a mailbox for children to leave their cards with feelings and questions. There are little windmills. There are just things that make it a place where field trips would go and take time. And there's a plaque that tells you this is who he was. When Jesus heals the man that has mental illness, or maybe it's a demon, we can explore which and what, how, what, whether it changes depending on which it is. When Jesus heals him, the townspeople beg Jesus to leave their town. I suppose they've already tried to deal with the challenges of this man. Maybe they've ignored it when they could. Looks like they kept on buying him shackles, so they were prepared to spend some money. Maybe there were things that they could have done for mental health for him that seemed too expensive for them, so they didn't do them. In any case, the townspeople carried on kind of living around his struggles. And when he was healed, it disrupted the structure of the world that they had in place, the world that they had negotiated and the where they lived in. We do have to get past the language about demons. I used the word mental health earlier, but I think if we brought those people from that Gerasene community in time travel to our time, they'd probably see demons all over the place. There's a worldview here that is different from ours. And it actually matters whether you think it's mental health or demons, and I'll get to that in a second. But I think the point is that real change is costly, especially if it's change from something that you were very committed to before. And that again is on a personal level or on a societal level. Real change is hard and costly because you are already committed to something else and it's structured to stay that way. As an example, you may remember that a Premier of Ontario a number of decades ago, Mike Harris, downloaded the mental health system to the municipalities, but didn't download the money that went with it. And granted, those institutions where people lived, they were terrible institutions, but the result was that people with mental health issues were suddenly on the streets of our communities. And communities not knowing how to deal with that, there have been stories over that time of police shootings where it was simply that the police were not trained to know what to do with someone who had schizophrenia and looked like they were going to do something violent. So in a previous church where I served, that actually happened. A police officer shot someone in a streetcar, and it was someone with mental health issues. And we tried to get the whole community together to talk through what would the solutions be? Would it be about a change in policing, since that was now the structure where the money was going? Or would it be some kind of change in the mental health system? And what we learned was regardless of what change it was going to be very costly, more costly than we could single-handedly do anything about. So why should we be involved? Number one, Jesus is on the side of healing. Every gospel, story after story, Jesus is on the side of healing. Number two, to look at Paul's letter to the Galatians, where there is neither Jew nor Greek, nor slave nor free, nor male and female. It's not that cultural differences or personality differences are erased. It's that everyone is included, everyone is supported, everyone has access to care. As we observe the National Indigenous Day of Prayer, we can look around us and see there are many structures in our society that we've been recognizing for a long time need change. Some of them are larger than we can do anything about. So they involve our advocacy, and they involve the individual things that we can do as a congregation and as individuals to disrupt ourselves out of the structure that could easily keep us in place. Universally accessible support is expensive. It's costly on a personal level. It's way more than, oh, my child has the wrong friends, I need to fix that. Real support for a person is costly. The part of the story that does trouble me, that I want to leave open-ended, is why did Jesus insist that the man stay in his community? If it were that it's mental health, well, maybe it's going to happen again and there's no reference to structures in place to help him stay healthy. If it's a demon, well, the demon's gone. So yeah, stay and, like the woman at the well, stay and be a catalyst and transform your community. But it kind of matters which way you think about that in terms of how this man is left in his community. He's to be a catalyst. The story says that. That we know. And so let's bring it back down to the level of individual persons, because that's what we're speaking about with this man. He's going to need supports, but his presence also is a catalyst. It's transformative to those who know him. That's what Jesus intended for him. Another way we could frame it is, well, I mean, we see the herd of pigs. This guy's not Jewish. Jesus had not evolved in his understanding enough to let a non-Jew be among his disciples. That was the Syrophoenician woman saying, even the dogs get the crumbs. So it may be that Jesus is also moving in his understanding. But I think that the story tells it as Jesus intends those who are struggling to be catalysts for us. On an individual level, and in our St. John's community level, that means that how we structure ourselves matters. There's neither Jew nor Greek here. There's neither slave nor free. There's neither male and female. Everyone has pastoral care. Everyone has the warmth of relationship. That's how it's to be. We're always building the church. Even from where we've been before, we're always building the church. So that's the one we're building. The one with neither Jew nor Greek, nor slave nor free, nor male and female. The one where each of us is cared for and supported. That's at the personal relationship level. It's at the structural advocacy level. It's God's calling to us.